On Tech News Today, Rakuten buys Viber, Bitcoin under attack, and Facebook gender options? Well, it's complicated. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
It's Valentine's Day, Friday the 14th of February, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the most important stories of the day in conversation with the world's leading journalists. Our guest today is Marques Brownlee, video producer and product reviewer on his YouTube channel, MKBHD. Welcome, Marques.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Marques, you just passed a big milestone, a massive milestone, 1 million subscribers.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It's pretty awesome. It's different. It's a huge number. It's another digit. Yeah. But it's encouraging to continue to make more stuff.
And your subscriber base is still growing pretty fast, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's been one of those curves where you can see that as more people find it, more people continue to find those people finding it. So it kind of has an accumulation, kind of like snow. But yeah, it's still growing pretty fast.
I have to say, Marques, of all of the different places on the internet that your content can be found, Reddit seems to explode. Anytime you post anything, I'm sure you know this by now, but pretty much any video that you ever do ends up on Reddit, and pretty much 100 comments all talk about how awesome you are. That's got to feel kind of good.
Yeah.
Jason, can we roll the video that he posted just kind of looking back at his career on YouTube?
Here we go.
You look like a baby in this one. Look at that.
You had no idea what you would do.
See, this is one of the reasons why you're popular, because they're really nicely produced. They're very simple and clear. Back then, you had some pretty low-res video compared to now.
Yeah.
So I guess it was MKBLD?
SD. Standard def.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Right.
Well, it's awesome, man. You've done a lot in a short amount of time, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that are trying to emulate your success, because it's undeniable that you've been pretty darn successful doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Good stuff.
And I think it's also encouraging that you do really good reviews, really, really good product reviews. And good product reviews are surprisingly rare. I've been kind of an editor and a writer for many, many years, and I've managed product reviewers. And a lot of times product reviewers go at the product in a way that leaves you still wondering, you know, whether you're really familiar with the product, or, you know, you're still not sure. After people watch your product reviews, they feel like they really know the product, and that's a rare gift, and it's great to see that being rewarded with a lot of traffic and a lot of engagement.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's like the number one goal I have when making a lot of the reviews is to make a video that I wouldn't want to watch. I think I said that in that video. And specifically when you're trying to decide if you're buying something, that sort of motivation helps a lot with the way you show a product, I guess, and camera angles and narration and everything.
Yeah. And just one other quick thing. Now, you, I believe your Wikipedia page says you're a former professional Ultimate Frisbee player, but in fact, that's not true, is it?
Right. So the team is former. The team I actually played with. Actually, I'm wearing the New Jersey jersey right now, but the team is no longer. So I'm changing teams, but I'm continuing to play both in college and professionally.
Okay, awesome. We're going to get to the news in just a second, but first I wanted to point out that you may have noticed we're all wearing Google Glass.
Right.
I don't know if anyone noticed that. I mean, this is just normal daily attire here at Twit.
That's right. Leo forces us to wear Google Glass so he can monitor us 24/7. It's awful. Please send help. No, but this is our special Valentine's Glasshole edition. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the videos. We're all recording video right now. And so we're going to put this together in a single video so you can see what it's like for the technical director, for the anchor, and for the guest, all of our perspectives at once. And in the fourth quadrant, you're going to see the show itself, I guess, right? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I'll put the actual live cut.
Yeah, so it's going to be, it's kind of an interesting experiment that expands on the one Jason did, because Jason recorded him doing this show months ago, and that was a really fascinating and intimidating video to look at the TriCaster and think, oh, man.
It was a lot of fun. There's got a lot of comments on that one.
So, yeah. So this is our Valentine's Day episode for people who love technology.
That's right.
That's right. All right. Well, Japan's online commerce giant Rakuten bought the messaging app Viber for $900 million in cash. Now, this is a big, big deal. This will add 300 million users to Rakuten's existing 200 million user base. And it's also part of a larger trend toward these kind of all-purpose messaging apps. Marquez, have you used Viber?
I actually haven't. I only use SMS and GroupMe because my teammates also use GroupMe, and like that's it.
Yeah.
So I've never even touched Viber.
I was surprised to learn in researching this story that it's one of the biggest among its biggest markets are Russia, Australia, and the United States. It's apparently very huge in the U.S. Even though, like, I personally don't know anybody who uses it. But essentially, this is an app that competes with Skype. So it's, you know, you can now make calls with it. You used to be able to only make calls from one app user to another. Now you can call from the app to an ordinary phone. So it competes with Skype. It also competes with WeChat, WhatsApp, and Line. And those internationally are huge runaway successes coming from various countries and varying depending on where they are in the world. And one of the most interesting things, Marquez, I think, is the trend away from big all-purpose social networks like Facebook toward, little special purpose social networks, but also toward these messaging apps, which aren't really social networks at all.
Yeah, I've seen, and even Facebook by itself, kind of breaking out its services into different apps. Like instead of just having the Facebook app, you can get the Facebook messaging app to just do Facebook messaging. So it's an interesting trend, I guess. I don't know if it's like, if there's an overall goal to this, like if that's a whole trend that everyone is moving to, or if it's just something we're observing in the short term.
Well, I think the biggest loser in all this is the phone service. I mean, everything, you know, obviously everything is going to the internet. We talk about TV going to the internet. We talk about all these things going to the internet. But there's going to be a critical mass at some point where so many people are using these kinds of apps that, you know, everybody will forget to use the phone system. It'll all just be, you know, bits over the internet. And, you know, that'll be fine. Another potential competitor is Google Plus Hangouts, which enables you to have calls. And in fact, everybody knows that Google Plus video hangouts is when you can have up to 10 users. And now there are companies extending that to enable up to 100 phone call participants for business calls and conferences and so on. And so this is a big, big trend toward these IP-based phone products. And you know what these companies are really after, the WhatsApps and especially Viber, because Rakuten is an e-commerce platform, a huge e-commerce platform based in Japan. What they're really after is commerce. They want to get everybody doing their communication on these devices, and then once they've got everybody kind of locked in, they're going to start selling everybody stuff, right? So and they'll have digital wallet functionality so that they can skim pennies off of the transactions and make a fortune. So we'll be looking at that pretty closely. I want to talk about Facebook because Facebook has changed their gender options. They used to have two gender options, male or female. But now, well, it's complicated. A third gender option called custom provides a drop-down menu of 56 gender options once you start typing the custom box. The new options include pan-gender, gender variant, two-spirit, which I've never heard of, and the somewhat geeky-sounding gender identifier, non-binary. So with us to talk about this today, we have a last-minute guest that was just brought in moments ago, and it's Donna Tam. Welcome, Donna.
Hi.
So why do you think Facebook did this?
Facebook, I think, has always been a proponent of gay rights, and Mark Zuckerberg has made that pretty clear that they're all about being inclusive. They work very hard to recruit members of the gay community into their staff, and he's been pretty vocal about that. He's also been at Pride. He was in the parade, and there was lots of press about that. So, I mean, I'm sure this is about one of their core messages, which is about communicating and connecting with people all over the world.
It's interesting because, of course, Facebook and Google and lots of other companies want to establish themselves as the center of identity. right? So they want people, ultimately, eventually, Zuckerberg will like people to use their Facebook profile as their identity in on the online world. Identity for logging into sites, identity for buying things, identity to show who you are. Google uses Google Plus identity to identify you as a writer, as a columnist myself. I use their system that so that when somebody posts something online and says it's me, they can say, no, that's not Mike Elgin. You're faking it. But they know when I post something, that's really me. So they're using it for identity. And this sounds like the really right way to do it. They're providing identity to be able to identify who you are without trying to tell you who you are. That's the difference. In the case of gender assignment, gender has moved from a sort of antiquated view where it's biological to a new view where it's about identity. Would you essentially agree with that as a larger social trend?
I mean, this Facebook certainly is like the first of social media to do something like this. But I think you make a really good point that it is about identity. It's also about having the choice to freely express yourself. And that certainly is the case here.
I think it's funny that they have 56 possibilities, but that they don't have the, you'd think, you know, at first I thought, why don't they just leave it blank and let you write whatever mm-hmm. you want into the box? But of course they can't do that because people are jokers and they would put completely ridiculous things and make a mockery. That would become standard if they did that. So they've tried to have a really large range of possible options without making it sort of turning it over to people's sort of sense of punking their friends and family.
Well, I don't actually know why they chose not to have that, but that could be a reason why. There was some discussion internally here about that because we were wondering if people wanted to do decline to state or something like that, if Facebook would allow for it. I did notice that you could just put other and have it more ambiguous, you know, so that you didn't have to declare exactly to people how you identify.
And do you expect other companies who have a sort of a gender option to go in this direction and follow Facebook's lead here?
I mean, I think we've seen in the past that companies often borrow things from each other. So that is a possibility, especially as more and more people are bringing this to the forefront. I could see that happening.
Yeah. And eventually, maybe in 50 years, the government will follow suit as well. took them a while in race and some other things. Well, anyway, I want to thank you so much for joining us at the very last minute and stepping in to explain this. And I appreciated your story on this, and we'll be watching this and other Facebook changes in the months ahead. Thanks for joining us, Donna.
Sure.
You can find Donna on Twitter at Donna Y Tam, T-A-M. Thanks again. Well, could you go back to the Bitcoin story? Because we have our Bitcoin interview. And this is a really fascinating story we've been covering for, I guess, all week. But it's a very complicated issue. Essentially, what's happening is that two major Bitcoin exchanges this week stopped trading because of denial of service attacks. The exchanges, Mt. Gox and Bitstamp, weren't alone, and they were affected. Lots of people were affected. The attack cratered the value of Bitcoin and caused errors in routine transactions. And joining us to explain what's going on is science writer Morgan Peck. Welcome, Morgan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Very well. Thank you. Can you explain what happened in plain language so that everybody can understand it?
Sure. So the first thing I would say is that there's no the Bitcoin network itself is working fine. The payment network, the payments are going through. The problem is that somebody has figured out, and they figured out how to do this 2 years ago. They figured out how to change what the transaction looks like when the network is processing it. So the result is that you have two receipts for this transaction, and it's the same transaction, and the network itself can only deal with one of them. And so it processes one of them, and then the other one is essentially ignored. So the network itself knows how to deal with this, and the record that you have is fine. But what happens is that the problem is when you have services that are trying to account for how many Bitcoins you have in your wallet, There have been difficulties with that. And Mt. Gox's problem was that their own accounting was thrown into turmoil with this, because they would be they would send out coins to someone who was requesting their money back. And then that person would change the transaction, create a duplicate transaction to the network. And then the duplicate would get processed. And then they would go back to Mt. Gox and say, well, it didn't go through. But in fact, it did go through, but Mt. Gox wasn't able to see it because they weren't looking for the right ID on the network.
And this kind of confusion is not what you want to happen to your money, essentially. So what exactly is a transaction malleability? I keep seeing that phrase associated with this issue.
It's what I just described. It's the fact that on the network, the network is processing payments not as coins, but as a series of transactions. So what you actually own is a reference of a series of transactions that go into the past.
I see.
And so what you own is outputs from inputs from other transactions. And when you send that your coins to somebody else, it's referencing all of those transactions.
So how is this related to the Silk Road 2 problems we heard about this week? They're related, right?
They are. Silk Road is claiming that the same hack occurred to them. It's pretty appalling that they would leave their services online after Mt. Gox shined a huge light on it, which is what they basically did. And if their service was responding in the same way or dealing with transactions in the same way, then you would think that they would shut it down, but that's not what they did.
It's fascinating. Well, I want to thank you for coming on at the last minute to explain all that. And where can people find your work?
Most of the Bitcoin stuff that I write is on IEEE Spectrum magazine.
Okay.
But it's around elsewhere. I'm a freelance writer.
All right. You also write for Scientific American and some other publications on other topics as well, right?
I do. Yep.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks again for joining us.
Okay.
You can find Morgan at Morgan Peck on Twitter. Well, the world's largest solar project started producing electricity yesterday, and lots of it. The $2.2 billion Ivanpah solar thermal power plant has more than 300,000 computer-controlled mirrors that reflect sunlight into boilers, which then create steam that turn turbines to create electricity. The plant is part-owned by Google and can provide power to 140,000 homes. This is quite a project, and if you've seen the video on this, if you're looking at the video now, it looks like it would blind you to look at it. It's just so much energy. It actually produces close to 400 megawatts of electricity. It's just an incredible amount of electricity, and it's very unlikely that anything this size will ever be built again. And the reason for it is that the cost of building something like this from a megawatt to dollar ratio, however you want to calculate it, is never going to be, you know, that's always going to be higher than other types of solar power. Since this thing was approved back in 2010, the cost of producing regular solar panels, the kind you'd have on your roof, or, you know, just regular solar panels for home consumption or for small businesses, has gone way through the floor. It's really cheap now and keeps getting cheaper all the time. And we're getting to a sort of singularity when you're going to be able to just print solar panels very cheaply, almost like printing, you know, sheets of paper or whatever, and you're going to be able to tile them everywhere, and it's going to be very inexpensive. But it's too bad because these things are really impressive and they're fun to watch. How do you feel about the future of solar power in general, Marquez? Are you a pro solar power person? Do you think that's the future of alternative energy?
I'm a fan of electric, period. And I'm in an apartment, so I can't like change a lot of the infrastructure that's a part of this building. But I'd be more than happy to switch to solar when I move into my own place. I think that's a great idea, despite the price, because of how much more energy efficient it is, how much it saves you. So, yeah, I'm a fan of solar and electric.
Yeah, so am I, and I'm very bullish on it. Right now, I think I've seen figures somewhere in the neighborhood of 1% of the U.S.'s energy needs are supplied by solar. It's pretty tiny, but I really think that solar is the future, and I'm going to tell you why. It's my sort of universal theory about why big tech happens. The reason solar is going to be very, very big and the overwhelmingly dominant source of alternative energy in the future is because that's what the Pentagon wants. The Pentagon wants solar power. And the reason they want solar power is because they tend to project power into hot, dry places. The experience of the U.S. military in Afghanistan and Iraq demonstrated this enormously. Enormous numbers of lives were lost in both of these conflicts because the U.S. had to have these gigantic convoys of oil tankers driving through dangerous areas every day, billions of gallons of oil to and gasoline to have generators going to run all the devices. They had to have truckloads of batteries for all these gadgets you read about and hundreds of thousands of troops over a period of many years. It's massively expensive. It's very dangerous. It's just completely wrong. Whereas solar power is energy that you can get wherever you are as long as you're in a reasonably sunny place. And so, you know, if you look back at the history of technology, the reason we have GPS is because the military wanted it. The reason we have the internet is because the military wanted it. The reason we have wireless communications like mobile phones and so on is because the military needed it. The Pentagon drives the big items in technology and always has. And so in the contest with alternative fuels and all these other things, solar is going to win out because DARPA and the Pentagon is never going to stop investing in it. And so and it's something that can be made cheaper and cheaper all the time. So I think we're facing a solar dominant future, and that's just an awesome thing. But this particular power plant is being called the Hoover Dam of solar because it's just such a massive project. I think this is going to be looked at as a throwback to a previous era when solar power was a big thing, because in the future I think every little thing will be have its own solar power. Your smart glasses will have its own solar power. Your phone will have its own solar power. Of course, the small devices will have to they'll only help the battery life. They won't actually be able to charge your phone with solar power alone, not anytime soon. But we're looking at a really interesting future. And Marquez, you've no doubt heard about new technology that enables phones to charge through the screen. There were some rumors that even Apple was working on that. Have you actually seen any demos of that kind of technology?
No, I'm always on the lookout for any sort of battery technology in general, because that's the number one complaint I always hear when people are looking for a new smartphone. How long does the battery last? How long does it take to charge? How fast does it recharge? You know, is wireless charging? What are the advantages to buying a certain phone with a certain battery? So I'm always on the lookout for those things, but I haven't actually gotten to see in person that particular example.
Yeah, I've seen a YouTube video of some technology, and of course we've seen the Apple patents and other patents. We've heard about research in this area. I think it's pretty clear that the smartphones of the future will have multiple ways of charging and getting electricity. I think they're going to, you know, wireless charging is going to become standard. I think there'll be solar charging on the front and back so that you don't have to think about which way is up, which way is down. There'll probably be some degree of kinetic charging like you have in some watches and so on. Certainly wearable devices will have kinetic charging as one of the options. So, you know, they're just going to get electricity where they can get it, and that'll extend batteries because batteries are not improving at the rate of everything else. So they need all the help they can get. Well, Taco Bell is testing a mobile phone-based ordering system at 5 Southern California locations. They plan to expand nationwide by the end of the year. Now, this sounds like a small deal, probably not worth mentioning. Taco Bell has an app, big deal. But I think that this is actually this kind of thing, and the whole fast food industry is sort of converting over to this kind of approach. I think this is really, this may be an alternative future that people don't talk about enough for mobile commerce. And Marquez, I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. So the model of mobile payments that we've heard is that you get a mobile payments app, you know, Google Wallet or something like that, and you walk around and it's like a credit card, and you go in and they either accept it or they don't. Hopefully if they accept it, then you use that to pay as if it's, you know, a debit card or a credit card or cash or whatever. And maybe you can make that wireless either, you know, through NFC or through, you know, through iBeacon or something like that. The sort of junk food version of that is that the brand itself has its own app. And on that app is the menu, is the locations with directions to the locations. It has other features. So, for example, the Taco Bell app has a really cool feature. If you want to, let's say you want to run for the border and you want like some burritos or something like that and you want to go to Taco Bell. So you just pull out the app and without even knowing where Taco Bell is, you know there's going to be one nearby if you're in the United States. You just enter in exactly what you want with a menu and you can have all the options. You want it with no onions and all that kind of stuff. And then you hit send, basically. And then it'll say, well, here's the local. It'll give you the prices of the local, of the nearest Taco Bell. And then it'll give you directions to the store. The GPS on your phone will tell Taco Bell when you're close enough for them to start your order. So you can do this 3 hours in advance if you want. You can be 50 miles away if you want to. But when you get close enough to where you're a minute or so out, they'll make your order. And when you get there, it's just been prepared. They hand it over and you drive off and it's paid for because your credit card is already entered into the app. This is a totally different model, Marquez, from the payment model. And it's especially, I think, got a good shot at being the dominant model because of beacon technology like Apple's iBeacon. If the app can just load when you walk into a store, any sort of retail environment, you just walk in and boom, there's the app for ordering things, for paying for things and everything, then why would you need one of those all-purpose apps that just was kind of generic?
Yeah, I've seen, because I saw this story, I was talking about it with someone yesterday, and I was like, you know, is this really new at all? Like, Taco Bell has an app, great, that's not a big deal, but the fact that it's so well integrated and there are so many other features, like, again, the fact that you said that it doesn't actually tell the Taco Bell to start making the order until your GPS tells you that you're close, that's, like, really impressive that it would actually, that they thought of putting that in and getting this technology all together. So I'm impressed with it. And I hope other companies like Qdoba and Chipotle and all the other ones that have apps that don't quite live up to all these features, I hope they all jump on this too.
Yeah, they all have apps, and I expect that they might. I mean, ultimately, the thing about junk food is that when you go in to order your food, there's some teenager or something sitting there just pushing buttons. You know, it's already kind of locked in. The options are already very finite. Everything that happens at that cash register, from the choice, from the options, from the whatever it is, to the payment, is all easily replicated in an app. There's no need to have that person standing there when people can do it themselves. So it's an interesting option for the future of mobile payments, and it remains to be seen whether people will integrate beacon technology into this so that the app is always kind of there for you.
Right.
Well, if you went to Google.com today, you may have seen something very sweet. Google collaborated with Ira Glass, the host of This American Life radio show, for today's Valentine's Day doodle. Each candy heart on the site plays people interviewed by Glass and others about their experiences with love. And these become animations that are sketched on the candy hearts, and they were created by Google's doodle staff. And they illustrate each of the stories, and it's a very, very nice thing. Ira Glass is quite a storyteller, and these are really, really kind of funny, poignant sort of Valentine's Day things. I understand that this exact doodle is not available outside the United States, but if you are within the U.S., you should check it out. It's very cool, and again, of course, celebrating Valentine's Day. Well, that's our show today. Thank you so much for joining us, Marquez. I really appreciate you taking the time out and sharing both your experience with becoming a superstar on YouTube and also your insights into mobile technology.
For sure. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So where exactly can people find your work? Because a lot of people listen to us and they don't see your lower third there. How can people find your work online?
I do videos and I put them on YouTube. So my YouTube channel is youtube.com/mkbhd. And then those five letters for any other social network. So Google+, Twitter, Facebook. It's all /MKBHD. That's it.
And I'm looking forward to the future of MKB 4K.
4K, yeah. And 8K.
And then Yeah, I've been asked if I'm going to like change the lettering, but my argument is that HD includes UHD. So I think I'm future-proofed. I'm set with
this for a few years
until something replaces that, and then you're toast.
Yeah, something above HD or something.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. Please send your news tips to our email address at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message. Also, post and upvote your favorite stories on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and find the rest of our social pages by searching for Tech News Today on Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, and YouTube. If you haven't already, subscribe to our Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. Look for the video we're creating. It's going to come out to a YouTube website near you. And
probably inside Twit.
Inside Twit?
Yeah. All right, we'll put it up there.
We'll make sure you find it. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. I'm Mike Elgin, and I'll see you Tuesday.